Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to the Sunday edition of Racing Across America. I am Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. Hopefully everybody had a great Christmas. Everybody who was celebrating a great Christmas yesterday, family and friends, and opened up some presents and had a great day and kicked back and relaxed, ate well, and enjoyed the day. That's the game plan. But we are back in it today with really nice racing. Let's start out, though, by thanking our friends at Gulfstream Park. They've got a couple of stakes down there today of note, but they have the championship meet that runs through April 3rd. And during the championship meet, we appreciate the sponsorship of Gulfstream Park for some of the programming and events here at Capital OTB. So again, we appreciate their support, Gulfstream Park and the championship meet. We'll again have some of their action on the network this afternoon with some stakes action the day after Christmas down at Gulfstream, but really nice stakes action across the country, including a great stakes card at Fairgrounds and its opening day at Santa Anita with a stakes-laden card there as well. So we'll talk about those venues this morning on Racing Across America. A little bit later on in the program, we will be joined live by John White from Santa Anita and go over their, again, really nice stakes card. Looking forward to seeing Flightline in the Malibu, the super talented, so far in the two starts, the super talented runner from West Point Thoroughbreds. Going to be fun to see what Flightline can do this afternoon. But that's just one of many stakes on the card today at Santa Anita. So John White will join us in a little bit. He'll be live, but because of the holidays and whatnot, we taped an interview with Joe Christofek from Fairgrounds a couple of days ago and went through the stakes action at the Fairgrounds and more with Joe. Again, they have a great card this afternoon as well down at the Fairgrounds, and we'll be looking at that live this afternoon as well. So we'll kick things off here with Joe Christofek from the Fairgrounds. And as noted a little bit later on, John White will join us live. But up next, a look at the really, really nice stakes card down at the Fairgrounds this afternoon. Stakes action across the country on Sunday, the day after Christmas, and some of that great stakes action down at the Fairgrounds. A really nice card. Pick five carryover. It should be a bonanza day after Christmas for everybody. So I thought, who better to reach out to than our friend Joe Christofek, paddock commentator down at Fairgrounds. Joe, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Seth. How are you?
Very good. And I'll alert people, we're talking a little bit early. We had to get you on Thursday before the holiday just to make sure we get you plugged in. So if things change in the meantime, that's the reason. But you've looked at the cards already. You've kind of plugged in and locked in your thoughts on the nice stakes, so I thought we'd check in with you. Before we do that, I wanted to hit on some other notes from the Fairgrounds. First off, our friend Brian Addo was down there with you in the paddock last year. He's over at Gulfstream, but Kevin Kilroy has been added. And when he first showed up, I went and looked at some bio information. Poet handicapper Kevin Kilroy now down at the Fairgrounds. Talk about your new partner.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone can't be Brian Addo. I mean, the fact that we got Brian for a year, you know, was fantastic. You know, all the experience that he had, both writing and television, and he used Fairgrounds, and he loved being here, and he did a great job. But, you know, as a springboard to get the gig at Gulfstream, he lives in Florida. You know, he's one of my best friends. I couldn't be happier for him, and, you know, Gulfstream couldn't have a better guy doing that job. So everything worked out well for everyone, but I had to hire another new guy in that job. And, you know, Kevin's a really good writer. He's written a couple of books. He's a huge fan. And, you know, he comes into the game having never worked in it before, Seth, and it's actually really kind of refreshing because he's at the track and everything's kind of new to him. And he hasn't gotten sour. He hasn't, you know, kind of fell into some of the negativity that people can that have been in this industry for a long time. So, you know, he's still kind of getting his feet on the ground, but he's doing better and better every day with both the writing and the TV and the presentation. And to me, this was a longer-term investment in somebody that's going to be great for the industry moving forward. And very proud of the job he's done. And, you know, like I said, he couldn't be more passionate about what he's doing and, you know, bringing – himself into the game, you know, in his early 40s, he's going to make the most of the opportunity. And so far he has, and it's only going to get better from here.
Yeah, I watch your signal, obviously, in the afternoon when I'm doing the afternoon handicapping show. Watch some of the pregame usually and the paddock commentary as well, and you can get that enthusiasm. That's great. And really, in the short time he's been there, you can see the progress and looking forward to watching him throughout the season. I've complimented you guys before, not only the work you're doing out at the fairgrounds, but up at Churchill as well. I think your pregame show and your paddock is one of the most innovative out there, and you're always adding new twists and whatnot. And I'm not sure, but I don't think I've talked to you since you guys have added the Beyond the PPs little feature. And that's kind of a fun new feature as well, where it's just what the title suggests. Folks can find things on the page, but you guys during the day will find some things that aren't necessarily on the page, but offer potentially some good, helpful information for folks.
Yeah, especially, you know, information that can be helpful to the bettors, but sometimes just really interesting information, like, you know, the fastest BristNet speed ratings for, you know, the history of the Kentucky Jockey Club, and kind of just gets you reminiscing about some of the horses and the good ones that have won races like that in the past. So yeah, appreciate that compliment. We're always trying to give, you know, the viewers good wagering information, whether it be from the analysts or the graphics we put together, but also good overall information that just can kind of sometimes, you know, be interesting. You know, I love baseball. I love the statistics. And I think horse racing and baseball kind of work hand in hand with the valuable information and the interesting history that you can dig up as well.
Yeah, we don't necessarily put out those kind of stats on the level that baseball does, but it's fun to see kind of getting into that a little bit more with the feature. I wanted to touch on one more thing because I looked at your Twitter feed last night and you noted we get to look forward to it. It looks like a start sometime this season or this upcoming three-year-old season for Echo Zulu, who we saw start her career up here in Saratoga for Steve Asmussen, but you noted she has arrived at the fairgrounds.
Yeah, I was on the phone with Steve yesterday asking him about Epicenter, and, you know, I just thought to myself, like, where's Echo Zulu? Like, she would be a perfect horse for the fairgrounds. And he was actually driving down to Texas with his family to spend the holidays down in Laredo with his parents, etc. And I asked him, he's like, yeah, she arrived at the fairgrounds today. I'm like, well, you know, are you gonna campaign her at the fairgrounds? I mean, obviously you could go to Oaklawn, there's a lot of different things you could do with her, and I think he's gonna take it slow. And he mentioned that the Rachel Alexandra and, you know, most likely maybe even the Fairgrounds Oaks were on his radar, and I was able to jump back up on my soapbox about the Rachel Alexandra still being a grade two. You know, I think it's the most ridiculous, you know, egregious oversight the graded stakes committee could have. People always talk about, oh, it's a prep for the Fairgrounds Oaks. Well, a lot of the horses that run in the Rachel go to the Ashland to Keeneland. This race stands on its own, and just look at the horses that have won the race or participated in. I think nine of the last 22 Kentucky Oaks winners have participated in the Rachel Alexandra. There's no question in my mind that should be a grade one. And if we get Echo Zulu this year, you know, that even strengthens my case even further.
Yeah, I laughed when I read that, and I think you've got a great point that you made on Twitter and right here as well. All right, let's jump in some of the stakes action and set us up for the day, because you have two notable pick fives on Sunday afternoon. So just before we get into specifics, set us up on the pick five action a little bit later in the day.
Well, we got a lot of people that are loyal to the Fairgrounds product, but if you don't follow us on a regular basis, you really need to play the Fairgrounds races Sunday and Monday. Monday, we've got five stakes. Sunday, we've got six stakes. The weather looks like it's going to be in the 70s, partly cloudy, looking at fast and firm. And the cards from top to bottom, especially on Sunday, the 13-race card, from top to bottom, maiden special weights, lots of two-year-old races, allowance races, the six stakes races, and then the two big pick fives at the end of the card. We've got the $100,000 guaranteed pick five races 7 through 11. That's all stakes pick five. And then we kind of lucked into this, but nobody hit either pick five the last day we raced on Monday, the early pick five or the late pick five. So both of those pools carry over into the late pick five on Sunday to the tune of over $103,000. Late pick five races 9 through 13, first three are stakes, and the last two are very good wide open races as well. So that's free money in that late pick five pool. And like I said, from top to bottom, we begin at noon Central, 1 o'clock Eastern time. The card from top to bottom on Sunday with the two-year-old races, the turf, the stakes, et cetera, the pick fives. It doesn't really get much better than that.
People love pick fives, and you had a $103,000 carryover and a few days to kind of look at the card. I would expect that to balloon up very nicely, that late pick five, again, as the races 9 through 13 on Sunday afternoon. Let's give some ideas on these stakes races, and let's kick it off with the fifth race. It is the Blushing KD. I think there are a few ways you can go in here. More than unusual is a Brad Cox trainee. I thought advocating for Mike Stidham at a price, getting back to a mile and a 16th on the turf, was interesting. Their back numbers for Catch a Bid. Curly Ruth also has some numbers underneath. I pulled up, though, the Dowager, going back to October at Keeneland. Number three will be Summer in Saratoga. Summer in Saratoga is back in the Blushing KD on Sunday at the fairgrounds, but cuts back from this mile and a half win to a mile and a 16th. So there may be a question mark there. What are your thoughts on the Blushing KD?
Yeah, similar to yours. Now, I think a very important fact to note is that the rails come down. We've been 26 feet out with the rail on the Stahl Wilson turf course. The rails come down, so especially the two paths on the extreme inside are going to be fresh paths of grass. We have not been with the rails down in a long time, several weeks. So with the beautiful weather this week, I mean, again, it can sometimes be inside speed. It can definitely be inside, you would think. So do take that into consideration in your handicapping. And I think, Seth, that could benefit a horse like Advocating in a race that doesn't have a lot of speed. Mitchell Merle's a good forward rider coming out of the Panzeretta Sprint. Her best races have been in routes. And if you look, the only two times she got a clear and uncontested lead, she did win. She went gate to wire. So I like Advocating, and you got to look at Summer in Saratoga, too. She has won over the turf course stakes, the Tom Benson Memorial last March in the past. She comes in off that win in the Dew Wager stakes at Keeneland, and she runs well fresh for Joe Sharp and Corey Lannery. He's had amazing success on her. And she draws the rail. So for me, it'll be one of those two, either Advocating at a price or the logical Summer in Saratoga.
Yeah, Advocating is 8-1 on the morning line, and I think that turf sprint last time may help darken the form and keep those odds okay. And as I say, getting back to the mile and a 16th, I think is going to be helpful to her, and hopefully that price will hold. The seventh race at the fairgrounds on Sunday, the Shearer Memorial, 5.5 furlongs on the turf. This does kick off that all stakes pick five. Again, another fun field in here. Fire Crow three starts back with the triple buyer. Field Day goes out for Brad Cox. Pyron started the career for Steve Asmussen and showed a little promise early in the career, as did Lucky Curlin early in the career for Mark Cassie. They probably have to bounce back to what they showed early in the career. Will we get that? But again, I'm going to pull up a replay. We're going to look at the Thanksgiving Classic from early in this fairgrounds meet just a few weeks ago. The winner will be number seven, Just Might. Just Might, the last few races have been on the dirt, but also has pretty good turf sprint form. So to me, it probably goes through Just Might. But what are your thoughts on the Shearer?
If not for a really, really bad quarter crack in the Phoenix when he ran sixth, I mean, this horse could very well have won six races in a row. He's won five of his last six. And he's won on turf, and he's won on dirt. And if you're watching the replay of the Thanksgiving Classic right now, man, he has never looked more impressive. He was geared down in that race after going fast early. It almost looked like a public workout. And you're like, okay, well, why is Michelle putting this horse back on the turf? The last two times this horse ran on the turf, won the Mighty Bow and the DeHaas at Churchill and Colonial. It just really seems to have this field to me outclassed, with maybe the exception of Maniwa, who beat Just Might in the Kenner at Fairgrounds in January. But we haven't seen this horse since February. And talking to Wayne Catalano, it just seems like to me this is the starting point for Maniwa. He really thinks this can be a Breeders' Cup sprint horse, either on turf or dirt later on in the year, and he wants to be able to get him there. So this looks like a starting point for Maniwa, which would really truly make this Just Might's race to lose.
Yeah, and it's just it's fun to see those kind of horses. Part owned by trainer Michelle Lovell, Just Might, over $750,000 in the bank in 31 starts. So good job by that team. And again, just looks like it goes through that one on Sunday. The eighth race at the Fairgrounds, the Tenacious, another fun field in here. Coming out of the Lucas Classic, behind Nick's Go, Shared Sense for Brad Cox. Warrior in Chief has some early speed. Trident Hit for Ron Maquette has some back numbers that are very good. Tom Morley claimed Little Menace last time at Churchill and brings the horse down. I found that intriguing. I also thought Big Dreaming with the Bullet Workout coming in was a player. But I pulled up a replay from an allowance optional claimer last month at Churchill, and we're going to watch number 9, Happy American, get it done in there. Off of that and the victory in the race before, we're looking at a little bit of a win streak, and I think Happy American at a 10-1 morning line is very intriguing to me. What are your thoughts on the Tenacious?
Good choice of B-rolls. I mean, how often, Seth, do you see a horse run 9 furlongs and 10 furlongs with that kind of turn of foot in a dirt race? I mean, this horse has improved by leaps and bounds in the last couple of months for Neil Pessin. I mean, he won that race going a mile and an eighth on October the 2nd off the bench at 20-1. You know, and you kind of are a little bit skeptical coming out of that. But then he goes a mile and a quarter, and he just has this momentum on the turn, and he's 8 wide, and he wins under a hand ride going a mile and a quarter. Huge Bigley came back to win. Last Samurai came back to win. And, you know, I know he's cutting back to a mile and a 16th, but that turn of foot should be every bit as, if not more, effective over the shorter distance. There's some speed in here. Eben from the rail's got to go. Pirate's Punch has got to go. The Warrior in Chief, if he stays in the race, has got to go. Little Menace, you mentioned. Big Dreaming, I think Wayne Catalano was kind of sort of on the fence, but I think he's going to opt for the Buddy Deliberto, which we'll talk about here in a moment. So we'll see which race he stays in. But I agree with you. Happy American, Shared Sense has got a big chance. Major Fed's got a big chance. This is a really, really, really good addition to the Tenacious. A lot of different ways you can go, but I'm with you on Happy American.
Well, now we just got to have to hope that price holds up. Now that we're both on the bandwagon, I wonder, but that 10-1 looks really attractive. So we'll see. And as you alluded to, Big Dreaming cross-entered in the Diliberto, and that's the 9th race on the card at a mile and a 16th. This was one where I was kind of going back and forth on which replay to look at. And first I was thinking I'll pull up the Sycamore from Keeneland and look at Spooky Channel with a nice win back in October. But I decided just to pull up the more logical replay and let people see the first three finishers from the Bob Wright back on November 27th. It's going to be number 2, Another Mystery, number 1, Pixelate, and number 5, Monarch's Glen, running 1, 2, 3. They're back on Sunday. I think Halo again, after a couple of starts most recently up at Woodbine for Steve Asmussen, may be a little bit intriguing as well at a price. Your thoughts on the Diliberto?
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't use the Spooky Channel video because he will be scratched. He had a setback after his workout at Fairgrounds. Talked to Jason Barkley when we were collecting quotes for the advances, and he told me he's going to be out probably at least a few months. Disappointing, and that was Jason's first ever graded stakes winner off the claim. I do like Big Dreaming in this race. I think that he's a little bit better on turf than he is on dirt. You know, you see the race 2 back at Keeneland where he ran 2nd to Mega City. He came back and won easily on the synth at Turfway. And I don't see a lot of speed drawn to his inside. And I talked about the fact that the rails are going to be down. And I think inside speed and inside paths are going to be really good, and I think Big Dreaming could take advantage of that. This one, very special to Wayne Catalano out of his first-ever Breeders' Cup winner in Dreaming Havana, the connection to longtime owner Frank Calabrese, who's now 93 years old. And I'm like, Cat, what are you going to do with this horse? I mean, if he's going to be a stallion, you want to try to get as much, you know, dirt quality on his page as you can. And he's like, we can worry about dirt later. Mr. Frank's 93 years old. He doesn't want to wait. He wants to win now. So, I mean, just in typical Wayne Catalano personality fashion, he hits you with that. But this is a horse to watch out for down the road, and I think he's the horse to beat in this one. Although, again, Seth, wide-open betting race. Another Mystery was great in the right victory. Cavalry Charge has never been better for Dallas Stewart. he's going to prove that he belongs with this kind of stakes company. So, again, great way to kick off that late pick five with that carryover of just shy of 104,000.
Yeah, cavalry charge for our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds as well, coming off a couple of wins, adding to. I'll ask you, and I think it started, last season down at the fairgrounds. Dallas Stewart's had a pretty good year, I thought.
The cavalry charge?
Dallas Stewart in total. As a trainer, I think he's had a pretty good year. And like I say, I think it started last year down at the fairgrounds.
Yeah, no, he has. People kind of forget about him sometimes. He's had a really good overall career, He broke a lot of maidens two sets this September and November at Churchill with good young horses. He's got Surfer Dude. We'll talk about him in the Gun Runner coming up. He's got some nice young prospects. He wins with Louisiana Breds. He wins with open company horses. You know, his better horses seem to have a level of longevity. I just think he does a really good job.
Yeah, and if I'm not mistaken, the late fall meet down at Churchill, I think he won three on opening day. Got off to a great start there. All right, let's move to the two really nice two-year-old races, and we love the two-year-old races this time of year. We're just a couple of weeks away from them becoming three-year-olds on their way to the Oaks, and the Derby should be a lot of fun. The Untappable is for the two-year-old girls. Fun race again. Fanny and Freddie coming off a maiden breaker last time and an improved effort for Al Stahl. California Angel maybe a little bit overmatched in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly Turf, but should fit nicely with this field. But I pulled up a replay. Speaking of guys who are on a little bit of a roll, after a tough Saratoga where he had to endure that little bit of a quarantine in his barn, which put him behind the eight ball with some of his horses, I thought this fall in the last few weeks, Kenny McPeak has been doing really well, particularly with his two-year-olds. So I pulled up the Churchill November 27th win for number 11, Cocktail Memories. This is a debut victory. And, boy, you get a debut victory like this, just under 10 lengths is the chart margin. I thought Cocktail Moments looked really good here, and it may be very tough on Sunday. But what are your thoughts on the Untappable?
You mentioned the Brisnet Beyond the PP's graphics. I remember one of them specifically last 5 years at Churchill in the fall, and Kenny McPeak had a huge win percentage and ROI the last 5 years. And now this year, magnified by the fact that he just had a disastrous Saratoga and a lot of those horses got pushed back into the fall. One of those Cocktail Moments, I mean, wow. And I asked Kenny, I'm like 26-1. I'm like, you guys must not have liked this horse all that much, or, you know, you might have been surprised a little bit by her. And he's like, you know, man, they just don't bet me first time out. He's like, you know, I don't try to win first time out. Sometimes they win by accident. And when they do, it's normally from off the pace, because he's trying to teach them lessons. Man, that was a wild performance. She's bred to handle the two turns. I'm very, very happy that Kenny shipped her here from Kentucky for this race. And, you know, Fanny and Freddie, I think, got a shot. She really, really improved. Two turns at Fairgrounds last out that win. November 26th was better than it looks on paper. I think it's going to be one of those two Cocktail Moments for Fanny and Freddie, just because she's got the two-turn experience already.
And I have to mention my man Mike Deeney. I'm a big fan of Mike Deeney down at Tampa, to the point where some viewers make fun of me when he wins down there. But Mike Deeney ships in a little Love and Luck, ships that one in from Tampa, which I think is a little bit intriguing. All right, let's turn the page and go to the boys in the Gun Runner. Again, these are two-year-olds going 8.5 furlongs. It's another fun field. Epicenter, you mentioned before, for Steve Asmussen, coming off the maiden breaker in the second career start when stretched to a mile up at Churchill. Surfer Dude took a while but broke the maiden last time out in the fifth career start for the aforementioned Dallas Stewart. Rocket Dog won in the debut effort. That's always impressive. Did it for Brad Cox. I pulled up, however, I went back to the Lively Shively at Churchill November 27th. It'll be number 5, Tejano Twist. Sometimes experience counts. I'm wondering if that'll work for Tejano Twist. Question mark for this one, of course, will be the distance. Has been sprinting throughout the career. But what are your thoughts in the Gun Runner?
Yeah, the pedigree's a little bit sprinty, too. Yeah. Practical Joke and Coovy on the dam side. And Brett Calhoun knows that. And, you know, in talking to him, he said, you know, this is a perfect opportunity for us to try the two turns. The timing's right after the Lively Shively. We're on the grounds at Fairgrounds. And we need to find out, can we be a two-turn horse leading into the road to the Kentucky Derby, or do we want to give this horse time off and just recognize the fact that we've got a really good sprinter? Because that last couple of sprint efforts for Tejano Twist have been fantastic. The allowance win at Keeneland and the Lively Shively, which you guys are looking at from Churchill. We'll see. I mean, it's a huge question mark, and he's probably going to be a short price. You know, Epicenter hasn't gone two turns either, but he did go the one-turn mile at Churchill on November the 13th. He not only won very impressively, but he galloped out way in front like a horse that's going to have no trouble with two turns. He's bred for it. And I'm surprised Steve doesn't have a horse on the Untappable, but he's got one in the Gun Runner for Winchell Thoroughbreds. Talking to him on the phone the other day, I know they would like nothing better than to win a race named for Gun Runner, and I think they've got one of their top Derby prospects in Epicenter entered to do just that.
And I will ask you, since we brought up the Gun Runner name and the name of the, and have talked about the year, what about the year Gun Runner has had? I think we all kind of picked up on it months ago, but it has just continued throughout the year. I mean, what a launch pad for Gun Runner as a sire this year.
It's been amazing. I remember when Curlin's first crop came out as two-year-olds, and they were kind of a little bit slow, and everybody's like, oh, Curlin's going to be a dud at stud, and obviously he's been fantastic because his horses just need a little bit more time and aren't quite as precocious. But, man, Gun Runner's been super precocious. Obviously he himself was at his best at a mile and an eighth, even a mile and a quarter. It's just going to be really exciting to see how these babies do moving forward, and Steve's got a half barn full of them, so I know that he's super excited about the future, too.
Joe, appreciate the conversation on Sunday at the fairgrounds. But as always, when we talk to you, we have to get an update before we let you go. Your Brilliant Racing partnership, how's it been going in recent weeks? And do we have some Brilliant Racing horses to look forward to in the weeks ahead?
Yeah, we've had a couple seconds towards the end of the Churchill meet. We've only got three horses left in the partnership now. We've got some claimed away from us. We had to retire one that was unraced. Yes, it's Ginger hasn't been herself in her last few starts. She did not perform well in the Panzeretti here, but she broke terribly from the gate, and we just can't figure out why. She normally puts herself in the race right out of the gate. She's going to get another chance coming up on January 1st here. In a similar spot, that race is already drawn. You know, hopefully she performs well. If not, she might go to the February sale, and she'll be a mom moving forward. But we really hope she runs well, runs back to the way she did last year, because, you know, we'd like to defend our title in the chicken fried steaks at Lone Star coming up in the summer. Busy Echo was second last time she ran at Churchill, and so was Steely Danza. And Busy Echo's entered on New Year's Eve in an allowance race. There's a tough Asmussen horse in there, but we think we can run second or at least make the lead. And then Steely Danza should show up on an overnight sometime soon. But what we're really excited about, Seth, is we've got three yearlings in Ocala right now with Tom McCrocklin. We've got one bitonalist, a filly, that looks really, really good. Tom's talking about sending her in as early as the spring to start getting her ready. We've got a West Coast colt and a Mastery colt as well. And this is the first time we've done yearlings. And it's certainly exciting. It's certainly interesting. And it's a little bit painstaking to wait for them. But we've got some money to spend. We've been trying to buy into a ready-made horse. We've made a few offers. We're still trying to buy into something to give our Brilliant Four partners some fun action during the course of the spring. But, you know, man, it's tough because when you get a nice prospect, everybody wants you to overpay, and we're not going to do that. So we'll bide our time, wait for the right opportunity, and hopefully make the right moves.
Well, you mentioned the partners and having fun, and I know a lot of local folks or a group of local folks have been in some of the Brilliant Racing partnerships, and I have run into them at various times, and they were certainly excited by the chicken fried steaks win, and I know it's a lot of fun to be an owner of a winner, regardless of where it is or when it is. And if folks would like more information, brilliant horseracing.com is the website, brilliant horseracing.com, and you can find more information. Joe, again, as always, really appreciate the conversation and the time. Great luck to you and everybody down at Fairgrounds on Sunday, and again, another great card on Monday as well, and we will talk again in the future.
Yeah, man, I hope everybody has a very happy, memorable, you know, fulfilling holiday season. And yeah, December 26th and 27th, between Christmas and New Year's, we're going to be enjoying ourselves at the fairgrounds with 11 steaks. So, you know, hopefully everybody can dive into the pools and leave with more money than they came with. We're looking forward to it. Got some good opinions and looking forward to it.
Sounds good. Joe Christofek from the fairgrounds.
The best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them, Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Conversation with Joe Christofek going through the fairgrounds card. And again, I will remind you, there's an all stakes pick five late in the day that kicks off race seven. And the carryover pick five starts in race nine. Our time, that's just about 5 o'clock this afternoon. Race nine at the fairgrounds, $103,000 in the pick five pool down at the fairgrounds. Again, that's the race nine pick five today. And you would have to think with $103,000, few days to handicap the card. People love that pick five. That pick five down at the fairgrounds will attract a lot of attention. So again, fairgrounds this afternoon, kicking off 1 o'clock our time with race one on a 13 race program. Again, with an all stakes pick five starting in race seven, carryover pick five starting in race nine. Should be a fun day down at the fairgrounds. Nice stakes action tomorrow down at the fairgrounds as well. Keep that in mind. In just a couple of minutes, we will be joined by John White from Santa Anita. I just checked, and unfortunately, I had been texting back and forth with John earlier this week, and he said, yeah, we're going to have some storms out here, so we'll see how things hold up. Had fingers crossed, but I just checked Brad Free from the Daily Racing Forum, his Twitter feed, just within the last 15 or 20 minutes or so. He said they're off the turf at Santa Anita, unfortunately, today, which includes some of the stakes action. So we'll have to see, you know, what scratches and whatnot look like. But we'll bring John in. Certainly we'll hit on the dirt races with John and just get overall thoughts on this upcoming championship, or this upcoming, it is a that level of racing, but this upcoming 2021-2022 Santa Anita meet, which kicks off, as it does annually, day after Christmas with a big card. So we'll talk about that in a few. But also wanted to note down at Gulfstream, there's a couple of nice stakes today as well. And this afternoon on OTB Live, again, I'll be back in, you know, an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for Sunday afternoon. We'll take a look at some Florida racing and obviously some fairgrounds a little bit later on, some Santa Anita. But Gulfstream will be in the mix. And today's fifth at Gulfstream is the Tropical Park Oaks, mile and a 16th for the three-year-old fillies on turf. And it's a nice, fun field. You have nine in here. Toby's Heart for Brian Lynch comes out of a fourth at Keeneland last time, close up fourth. But before that, won a rich stake at Kentucky Downs. Castellano on board for Brian Lynch. Toby's Heart, to me, very intriguing. Started the career in fine fashion. If you remember, this is a horse that broke the maiden last year, June of 2020, down at Churchill, and came up in the Bolton Landing turf sprint stake at Saratoga and won that convincingly. And so this horse got the career off with a very promising start. Since then, they've stretched the horse out a little bit, but 4 wins and 9 starts, over $500,000 in the bank, goes in the Tropical Park Oaks this afternoon. Breaker of Chain started the career over in Europe, came over here, broke the maiden at Kentucky Downs in start number 3, now runs for George Weaver last time out, ran 6th in a Keeneland stake, but I think should be an interesting fit with this group this afternoon. Bipartisanship for Grand Motion, another that started the career in Europe, has come over here to North America. 3 races so far, Belmont, Laurel, and Aqueduct. Broke the maiden 2 back at Laurel. Last time in a stake at Aqueduct, ran 7th, but the buyer number has been moving forward nicely in 3 starts. And Lady Spite Spear for Roger Atfield comes down from Woodbine. Could be very intriguing. On the morning line, second choice behind Toby's Heart. But Lady Spite Spear, again, lightly raced with only the 4 starts, working nicely over at Payson since arriving from Canada for Roger Atfield. I think that one's a player as well. Nice field of 9 in here. Again, haven't seen any scratches yet, but an entered field of 9. We'll hope that holds up in the Tropical Park Oaks down at Gulfstream. And in the Tropical Park Derby a little bit later on, that'll be race number 10 at Gulfstream today. A full field of 12 with some also eligibles. So you would think the size of the field will hold up. Tropical Park Derby, the 3-year-olds on the turf. Never surprised. Morning line favorite, likely favorite at post time for Todd Pletcher and Mike Rapoli coming off a stakes win up at Aqueduct last time. Safe Conduct, the Queen's Plate winner for Phil Serpy this year, is in there. I think that horse is interesting. A couple of horses on the outside, Moe's and Scarlet Sky, could be players as well. Scarlet Sky, the Shug horse, may offer a little bit of value off the comeback effort at Keeneland last time. I think the horse is better than that, but that race may darken the form a little bit. So again, at Gulfstream this afternoon, Tropical Park Oaks, Tropical Park Derby, and we'll be looking at those races, among others, on OTB Live on this Sunday afternoon. But in the meantime, we're going to take a break. We'll come back. We will be joined live by John White from Santa Anita to take a look at this really, really nice opening day card. Stay tuned.
Clubhouse Racebook is the Capital Region's new home for racing and sports. 25,000 square feet of Vegas-style action with live wagering on the best horse racing from around the world. 260 flat-screen televisions and state-of-the-art wagering terminals. So don't miss out. The fun is only minutes away at 711 Central Avenue, Albany, just off exit 5 of I-90. And don't forget, if you can't make it to the clubhouse, you can always wager online 24/7 at CapitalOTV.com.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by our friend John White from Santa Anita on this traditional day after Christmas opening day. John, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Happy holidays and a Santa Anita today. We have good news, and bad news. The first good news is it looks like it'll be sunny for today's racing card at Santa Anita. Also good news, it looks like the track will be fast for today's races at Santa Anita. The bad news is there will be no turf racing today at Santa Anita. All the grass races will be switched to the corresponding distance on the turf, which means we'll likely have a plethora of scratches in those grass races.
Yeah, we were going to look at all the stakes, but as I came up with that information and I said to you off the air, we'll concentrate more on the dirt stakes because without knowing the scratches, that just makes more sense. But fill us in, because I texted you the other day and you said the weather was kind of iffy and so you were a little bit concerned about that. What has the weather been out there like the last couple of days?
Mostly rainy.
Yeah.
So which we do need the rain. We've been in a very extreme drought here for quite some time. So from that bigger picture standpoint, the rain is very welcome. But for horse players, it's a shame because we had some nice turf races today at Santa Anita. There also will be Monday racing at Santa Anita, a 9-race card. However, the likelihood of any grass racing at Santa Anita on Monday is extremely slight, if not nil, because it's about a 95-96% chance of rain during the afternoon on Monday. So considering all the rain we've already had, combined with the extreme probability of rain on Monday, if you're anybody handicapping the races for the Monday card at Santa Anita, I would say you better be looking at those races to be about a 99.9% chance to be run on the dirt just like today.
Oh, okay. Good to know. And it's certainly plenty of racing ahead for Santa Anita, so they'll be on the turf at some point out there. And we know Southern California, typically very nice weather, but in the wintertime you can get these rainy periods. But, John, fill us in a little bit. Day after Christmas, traditional opening day, Saratoga. I mean, our big day, we all look forward up here at Saratoga opening day because you're waiting, 10 months and then opening day comes. But the big day of the meet is the Travers. So opening day up here is fun, but it's not as big as Travers Day. Out there, Del Mar, their big race is Pacific Classic, but their big day is opening day. And I think Santa Anita is somewhere in between those two. Probably closer to Del Mar with folks looking forward to opening day the day after Christmas at Santa Anita. Just talk about opening day at Santa Anita.
Well, you're right, Seth. It is one of the real big days on the racing calendar in Southern California, opening day at the Great Race Place. And I mentioned calendar. One of the reasons for that is the popular wall calendar that they give away to people that come out to Santa Anita, a free wall calendar. I've got a whole pile of them piled up through the years, and it's a really nice calendar. I've already got my 2022 edition, but it is always big. Back when I was first in Southern California, my first year working at Santa Anita was 1981. The first time I ever went to the races there, I was working for the racing form. I was on my way from Louisiana Downs to the Pacific Northwest to racetracks up there. I was going to Yakima Meadows, and I'm from the Northwest, so they were sending me back home after I'd had a stint at Louisiana Downs, and I stopped off with my father for racing at Turf Paradise in Phoenix, and we proceeded on to Southern California, 1977, President's Day week, and we spent a week at Santa Anita, and that was really exciting. I got to see Crystal Water win a race on the grass, and I saw Agent Carter go over the $1 million mark when he won the San Antonio Stakes that week. And back in 1981, my first year at Santa Anita, the Palos Verdes Handicap was the feature race on opening day. The Malibu was run early in the year. 1980, I had taken vacation from the Pacific Northwest, flew down to L.A. and saw a spectacular win, the Malibu Stakes. I was standing near the winner's circle when he won that day under Bill Shoemaker and broke the track record for 7 furlongs.
that would go on to have an undefeated 1980 campaign in which he literally ran out of competition. His final race was a walkover in which he just had to go around the course to pick up the purse there in New York. So, but then they switched it and made the Malibu opening, which I'm glad, because the Malibu is a much bigger race than the Palos Verdes. And we've had some really exciting editions of the Malibu in recent years, and today should be a good one as well.
Yeah, and you know, you brought up Spectacular Bid, and I was going to ask you about that because I pulled up your online column from last week where you talked about some of your favorite races ever at Santa Anita, and you mentioned that Malibu. And as I'm reading it, you said the win in the Malibu kicked off his 1980 campaign, and I kicked off how did, the end of the. And I forgot that Malibu used to be the kickoff race in that old four-year-old series at Santa Anita, which has kind of gone away. And now the Malibu's at the end of the year for the three-year-olds. But it was fun to read again about Spectacular Bid. And for folks in our audience who are too young to remember it, look up John's online column, read a little bit about that race, and maybe pull up some of his races on YouTube, because Spectacular Bid, one of the all-time greats. And one other race I wanted you to touch on, just because I remember John Henry before he was John Henry. I saw him run a couple of allowance races up here at Saratoga. But another on your list of all-time great Santa Anita races, the Oak Tree Invitational, 1981, John Henry.
Well, that was an unbelievable race. Again, if you do look at that at YouTube, it's just, even then, when you know how the race turns out, it's one of those almost can't believe it, because if you could stop the race at the eighth hole, you would bet your house, your car, and everything else on Spence Bate, who had Fernando Toro aboard, and Randy Winnick was the trainer. And, I mean, he looked like an absolute cinch. He had roared right up to John Henry and had gone right by John Henry. Not by a big margin, but he had clearly taken the lead. And John Henry, that unbelievable heart that he had, battled back along the inside and got the victory. It was vintage John Henry. The earlier seen John Henry win the Santa Anita Handicap, the 1982 edition, which was my first big cap, because I started in Southern California for the racing form at Hollywood Park in the spring of 1981. So it was the 1982 big cap was my first Santa Anita Handicap, and that was one of the all-time great Santa Anita Handicaps, because it was just a tremendous, serious battle down to the finish line between the Charlie Whittingham trained Perot and the Ron McNally named John Henry. And it was Shoemaker and Pinkeye. It doesn't get any better than that. And it was a photo finish. Perot got to the wire first, but then was disqualified. And it was a very controversial race, because really there was no contact made between the two horses in the final 70 yards. But again, if you go to YouTube and watch it, you can see how many lanes Perot drifted out. And I will say this, just because you don't make contact doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't come down if you're carrying out or in. And I say this because imagine if you're driving down the freeway and you're trying to go past somebody and start coming out of their lane, and to avoid them bumping you, you're going to go out. It makes it very difficult to pass somebody if they're doing that. So I certainly understand the call. But there were a lot of people, including Charlie Whittingham. I became very close with Charlie Whittingham through the years. I stood and clocked a lot of horses with Charlie Whittingham, including the tremendous Turf Distaff flawlessly. And Charlie, to the day he died, thought that Perot should have never been disqualified. Considering there was no contact, I understand where he's coming from on that.
Yeah, there's the old herding that folks still talk about now that goes on at the racetrack. And I'm with you. Your forward momentum has to change. You're now going diagonally, so that changed. But I, as you were talking, I pulled up your online column, that Santa Anita Handicap, 72,000 plus at the track that day, and John Henry becomes the first two-time winner of the Santa Anita Handicap with that move-up victory. So, and again, I'll tell people to look up your online column and read the rest of your top 10 from Santa Anita, because they're all kind of fun. But let's see if we can add some top 10 races to the list this year. Again, we'll take a look at some of the dirt races. We'll get some of your ideas kicking off in race number 6 this afternoon, the San Antonio Grade 2 event, mile and a 16th. I pulled up a replay of the Pennsylvania Derby. We're going to watch Hot Rod Charlie, the number seven here, who I think certainly was a very, very notable three-year-old this year, and this was one of the highlights of his season. A 111 buyer in here. Subsequently ran fourth in the Breeders' Cup Classic, but I think he has the edge on this group this afternoon. I thought Eight Rings was interesting. Express Train, Azul Coast. There are some fun contenders, but Hot Rod Charlie just has shown so much talent this year. I'm tilting in his direction. What are your thoughts on the San Antonio?
Well, in terms of formulating the morning line for this race, it's my belief that both bettors will be tilting in the Hot Rod Charlie direct. Hence, I made him the 6-5 morning line favorite. He could certainly go lower than that, but he's strictly the horse to beat in the race, no question about it. Part of it, Seth, and I think you'll agree with this, we had a vintage three-year-old male crop in 2021. I mean, Essential Quality, Medina Spirit, Hot Rod Charlie, Mandaloon, just up and down the line. Even in the sprinter race with Jackie's Warrior, I mean, it was just a tremendous three-year-old male crop. And so that's one of the things Hot Rod Charlie, I think, has going for him. I mean, other than Nick's Go, it seemed like the three-year-old males really did extremely well when they weren't running against Nick's Go, who is, likely to be Horse of the Year for 2021 after winning the Breeders' Cup Classic. But the Dean Spirit was second in the Classic, Essential Quality third. But Hot Rod Charlie, even though he was fourth that day, actually ran a good race, I thought. He was, there's been a little bit of a debate on where was the best part of the track on Breeders' Cup Classic Day at Del Mar that day. And I don't think it was a huge track bias, but I do think being down on the inside maybe wasn't the best place to be. And all in all, Hot Rod Charlie was right there at the 16th pole and weakened a bit in the final 16th. But, they had the blinkers on. They were not extreme blinkers for the Breeders' Cup Classic, but they'll be coming off this afternoon. So he goes back to no blinkers. And I'm just crossing my fingers that we see a Hot Rod Charlie that behaves himself out there today, Seth, because in the Haskell, of course, he caused interference during the stretch run and was disqualified. And then in the Pennsylvania Derby, there was an incident that provoked a inquiry and riders claim a foul. And Hot Rod Charlie did not get disqualified, but he kind of skated through by the skin of his teeth. Yeah. He drifted out really badly turning for home. And again, that's kind of similar to what happened in that Santa Anita handicap with John Henry and Perot. And that's why a lot of horse players can complain. And I certainly understand where why it exists is because there was a case of no disqualification in that Santa Anita handicap when they didn't make contact. And they didn't really seem to make contact turning for home in the Pennsylvania Derby. But Hot Rod Charlie, his number stayed up. Perot's number came down. So people would say, well, how come there was a disqualification in one race and not the other? It's a pretty dark question, actually. So, that's where I say Hot Rod Charlie was kind of lucky that he got his number to stay up there. But I thought he ran, he ran a 111 buyer, as you pointed out, at Parks. By the way, I worked at Keystone in 1980. And you're getting long in the tooth when a racetrack has undergone multiple names since you've worked at the track. We've gone from Keystone to Philadelphia Park to Parks, Parks Racing and so forth. So, but Hot Rod Charlie, he's definitely the one to beat. Once you get past him, really, it's a wide open deal. I mean, you could see, Express Train, the 7-2 second favorite. You've got Eight Rings. I made 4-1 and then a couple of 5-1 shots. Kiss Today Goodbye, Azul Coast. Kiss Today Goodbye pulled off a big upset in this race last year. He was a big price. He was 15-1, and he's coming off a good effort off a layoff in the Native Diver. He was 6-1 that day, and so I lowered his price a little bit off of that Native Diver from his price last time. And Kiss Today Goodbye has Kent DeSarmo, the Hall of Famer rider. One of the big stories in Southern California the last half of 2021 was the reemergence, the renaissance, if you will, of Kent DeSorbo, because he was riding in spectacular form the last half of this year.
I'll toss out one other, as you mentioned that, and I'm looking at the PPs here. One other human side story that I think is going to be fun is John Velasquez out on the West Coast. I think those of us over here on the East Coast were shocked when he said, no, no Florida this year. I'm headed out to Southern California for the winter. But I think that's tied into the relationship he's built up over the past year, year and a half or so with Bob Baffert.
No question about it, because he's going to be riding a lot of Bob Baffert's better horses. And so that makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. And he's riding Eight Rings right here as we kick off the season. How that shakes up. Eight Rings, you know, he's kind of been a funny horse. He runs big races from time to time, and then he runs clunkers. He actually ran a really good race at Santa Anita in early October that I thought made him dangerous in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. And he wasn't, like, totally embarrassed in the Dirt Mile. He finished fourth to Life Is Good. There are a lot of people that think Life Is Good might be the best horse in the country this year, while Nixco will be horse of the year for winning the Classic and the other races he won. But Life Is Good certainly is a brilliant individual. And, you know, I don't think it's any huge disgrace to run fourth, but Life Is Good. And then at Eight Rings was even money in the Native Diver. A lot of people thought, well, now we're going to settle in and see Eight Rings become a consistent colt. Well, that hasn't been the case so far, because he finished third at even money in the Native Diver, but he's the type of colt that would follow a disappointing performance like that and maybe come back and run a big race today.
Yeah, and again, John Velasquez there, and then the La Brea, which is race number 8, and we'll move on to look at the three-year-old girls and the three-year-old boys and the three-year-old girls in the La Brea going 7 furlongs. Baffert with 2 horses. John Velasquez gets on Calypso. Flavien Prat on Private Mission. And I pulled up a replay from Private Mission in the Zenyatta back in October. Private Mission will be the number 3 horse here on this replay. Subsequently disappointed running last in the Breeders' Cup Distaff, but I think the cutback to the 7 furlongs will be beneficial. Comes in with a bullet workout. Living My Best Life is really interesting, though. Lots of early speed. Cuts back from a win and a stake at a mile at Del Mar last time. Missy P, lightly raced, probably has to get back to the performance in the debut victory. But I think the 7 furlong workout coming into this intrigued me on Missy P. Your thoughts on the La Brea?
Well, again, here, to me, Private Mission is clearly the one to beat, and I think it will definitely be the favorite.
Yeah.
I mean, her 8-5. Missy P, who, as you pointed out, ran a huge race at her career debut, and that race was at Santa Anita. You know, off of that, she should be taken very seriously. I made her 5-2. And Living My Best Life, you know, when I first started making the line on this race, I had her as high as maybe 6-1. The more I looked at it, Seth, the more I thought, you know what, I get the feeling she might get some play in this race. And so I kept lowering her. So I went from 6-1 to 5-1 to 9-2 to 4-1 to 7-2 for my final price I made on her. And, you know, she is sharp coming into this race for John Sadler. And certainly it would not surprise me if she gives a very good account of herself. But if we see the Private Mission who won that Zenyatta that you just showed, remember the Zenyatta was against older, you know, and then she was against older again, Private Mission in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. And that was an insane pace she ran that day. I mean, 44 and change, 109 and change, and everybody, including Latrushka, just faltered that day. And in a way, it's kind of a good news, bad news situation. The bad news is she finished 11th, she being Private Mission in that race. But the good news is he was already out of the race in upper stretch. And you know Flavien Prat just let her coast in that day. So the race didn't really take much out of her, despite her insane, you know, fast fractions in that race. So that, and the way that Private Mission is trained in this race, as noted by the 58 and change bullet drill that she has on her tab coming into this, that would appear
to indicate it's all systems go for private mission, and I look for her to be very tough today.
Yeah, I totally agree. The cutback, and as you say, that was a crazy pace there with Letruska in the Breeders' Cup distaff. All right, let's turn the page and take a look at the Malibu Grade 1 event, $300,000. The three-year-olds get one last shot at a Grade 1. I always like that. And as an Eclipse voter, I don't vote until all of these races are through. I got my package the other day, but I didn't even open it up yet. I'm waiting for everything to get settled at the end of the year before I mark my checks on the ballot. But the Malibu Grade 1, 7 furlongs, I'm really looking forward to this. I pulled up the September 5th allowance optional claimer. Number 8, Flightline, will be the winner. I'm just, will Flightline validate what we have seen so far? I mean, debuts with a 105 buyer figure, the race we're watching here. I mean, the chart margin is over 12 lengths, a 114 buyer. I had talked to the folks at West Point. It was either Tommy Bellhouse or Terry Finley right after this race. And they were already kind of thinking, I don't know, we may wait for the Malibu. I think when you get a freakishly fast horse like this, the connections over the years with these types have had abbreviated campaigns because they're just worried they push themselves so hard. That may be the fact with Flightline. But in start number 3, moves into a Grade 1 event. Really excited to see what he can do. But Dr. Schivel is already proven as a stakes performer. So I think he is very, very interesting on the experience factor. And another lightly raced horse that's going to be fun is Triple Tap from Bob Baffert. The aforementioned John Velasquez on board. Also 2 for 2 so far in the career. Baby Yoda, we saw the crazy performance up at Saratoga, but subsequently has not validated that for Bill Mott. I'll be interested to see if he can rebound. This is a fun edition of the Malibu. What are your thoughts?
Well, in Triple Tap, here's a half-brother to a Triple Crown winner, a half-brother to Triple Crown winner, American Pharoah. And Triple Tap has done nothing wrong in 2 starts so far. He's won them both, both impressively. Got a nice 97 buyer in his win at Del Mar last time. So he certainly is another big player in this race. One thing we have in common, Seth, is I received my Eclipse Award for packet in the mail as well and have not opened it either because I'm waiting for the thing to complete itself, which it isn't. It hasn't always been that way, Seth, because I first voted in the Eclipse Awards in 1976. I voted for Seattle Slew as the champion two-year-old male that year. It took a lot of flack for that because he'd only raced 3 times. But his Champagne was one of the most sensational races I ever saw run by a two-year-old. I wasn't there in person, but I saw it on TV. And CL Sue was indeed voted the Eclipse Award as champion two-year-old male that year. But like I said, I got a lot of flack. Because back then, a 3-race Champagne was very unusual for a horse to be named an Eclipse Award winner. Nowadays, we see it all the time. Yeah. But in 1982, back in those early 80s, we had to turn our Eclipse ballots in well before the end of the year. It was like early December. And one of the things that changed that was the Hollywood Park Hall meeting that began in 1981. We had such big races during that, like the Hollywood Turf Cup and the Hollywood Fraternity and the Scarlet, that they decided that, well, we better not have the Eclipse Awards closed before some of these big races. Because, as you know, Seth, and New Yorkers know this, there was a time that basically in the United States, racing kind of shut down during the month of December.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was no Hollywood Fall meet, and racing in New York had, there wasn't any winter meet at Aqueduct or anything going on. So, but times change, and the Eclipse Awards voting changed, and I think this change was certainly for the better because we should see all of the racing for this year before we make, cast our votes. Flightline, I made a heavy 4-5 morning line favorite here. A lot of people think he'll go shorter. That wouldn't surprise me, but I wasn't about to make him 3-5 because then I'd have to be bumping up other horses, and I wasn't going to do that. So I thought that was appropriate. I wasn't going to make him like 6-5 or 7-5, something like that. He deserves to be at odds on favorite on the morning line because I think the key is he will be odds on. He's no secret. He's cost $1 million at public auction.
He was odds-on favorite in his debut, and then he was a heavy favorite, 1-5 in that Del Mar win. But he's those wins against a lot weaker competition that he's facing today. He's going to get the test, his biggest test by far so far today, and we'll just have to see if he can pass that. You know, it can go either way to me. I've seen a lot of horses like this, and when they get looked in the eye, remember Nashville, how he came into this race and was the 6-5 favorite over Charlatan. And Charlatan was more battle-tested, more proven, very similar to this Flight Line Dr. Shivel matchup. And it was Charlatan who won and won with authority, and Nashville cracked and didn't even hit the board that day. So, you know, that's a case where I could see Flight Line winning big, or I could see the opposite. I could see him running up the track possibly today because he's never faced as strong opponents as he is today. And Dr. Shivel is a proven, I mean, that's as tough a loss, I think, there was just about for anybody this year. I mean, it ranks right up there. I mean, because, again, if you stop the race at the 16th pool and let everybody bet, Dr. Shivel would have been 1-100. And that Aloha West came flying from way back and just nailed them. And, geez, as you watch that, keep watching that replays. I saw another one yesterday on TVG. They showed it, and I'm going like, wow. I still thought, gee, did Dr. Shivel win that? I mean, it's like it was that close. And that's that. It's too bad because Mark Ladd is a friend. His father, I knew training in the Pacific Northwest, clear back into the mid-1970s. He won a training title at the track of my hometown, Playfair Racecourse in Spokane. That Mark's father is Ron Glatt and was a very respected trainer in the Pacific Northwest. So Dr. Shivel, you know, he's a multiple grade one winner. He likes Santa Anita. They decided to point for this out of the Breeders' Cup. Now, there is a thought by a lot of people with good reason. It's usually best to take a stand at horses coming out of the Breeders' Cup because they were trained so hard for that situation to peak on Breeders' Cup day. And we see a lot of horses come out of the Breeders' Cup and regress. So that's something that should be kept in mind here, too. But Dr. Shivel, you know, has seemingly trained very well into this race and should be very tough today. And as I mentioned, you've got Triple Tap. And, you know, at Baby Yoda, you know, here's a horse that if I was just going off pure form, Seth, I would have made him 10-12-1. But it's Bill Mott and it's Jose Ortiz, but mainly Mott. Why would Bill Mott send this horse out here? He didn't have to do that, to ship him clear across the country off a couple of disappointing races. And look, Baby Yoda had no chance in that race last time as he broke poorly and then just had an absolute terrible time coming down the stretch. It was just a wretched trip. And it's a race you can draw a line through. Yes, he finished third in the Vosburg, but look, he was facing following seeing Frenzy Fire that day. Those aren't exactly cupcakes. So this is, to me, a dangerous horse. And I, out of respect for Bill Mott, really more than anything else, I did not want to go higher than 6-1 on that horse today. And I don't think people should be exactly turning up their nose against him. And he did run that 114 by, and I think that's one of the intriguing aspects of this race, that we get the matchup between the two horses that posted the highest buyer speed figure so far of this year, each Baby Yoda 114 and Flightline getting him 114. So it's a showdown, but in a way, between the two 114s, but it's not really viewed as a showdown because of the two subsequent, you know, disappointing races by Baby Yoda. But like I say, the fact that Mott, you know, why would he, you know, obviously this is the last chance to run against strictly three-year-olds, you know, your own age group at the grade one level. But, it's not easy, especially these days during the time of a pandemic, to be shipping a horse clear across the country. So you put all that into the hopper. That's why I think a good morning winemaker will take into account much more than just looking at the pure past performances, because races, they're not just run on paper. You know, you got to take into all the factors that you possibly can.
And I think you kind of nailed it as I was looking over the morning line and whatnot. I think that's 6-1. I'll be interested to see what the betting public actually does, but I think you're right in the ballpark because it's Bill Mott, it's Jose Ortiz. They ship out, and that 1-4, I was there that day, that 1-14 performance was eye-popping, and it was validated, not necessarily by Baby Yoda, but Olympiad, who ran second for Bill Mott, came back and won very nicely. So it was kind of validated. As you say, the Vosburgh was a salty field, and yes, I would tell people to go back. Do not think, oh, Mahoning Valley, and he ran badly. It's a rich race. It was a salty little field, and he had all kinds of traffic trouble in there. So it's worth maybe going back and taking a look if folks are looking for an alternative to Flightline. This Malibu is really a fun race this afternoon on a great card, opening day after Christmas out at Santa Anita. John, we really appreciate the thoughts, the conversation, and of course, we wish you and everybody out there good luck. We'll check in again as the meet progresses.
Thanks a lot, Seth. Always great to be with you.
Same to you. John White from Santa Anita. Again, really fun card today. Kicking off the Santa Anita 2021-2022 meet. Lots of stakes action. As we noted earlier, they're off the turf today, however, so adjust your handicapping accordingly, you know, check for scratches and whatnot. But we went over the dirt races, and hopefully those fields hold up because you toss in the La Brea and this really nice Malibu. Looking forward to that. As noted earlier, great stakes card down at the fairgrounds as well. Don't forget, they have an all-stakes pick five at the fairgrounds, and then the late pick five starting in race number 9 at the fairgrounds, a $103,000 carryover. And again, with a couple of days to handicap into that, people will pour some money into that late pick five at the fairgrounds this afternoon. They're underway with the pregame show at Gulfstream, so I will wrap it up for Racing Across America. Be back less than an hour or so for OTB Live on a Sunday afternoon. Should be fun. Lots of great action. And as we've noted this morning, lots of great stakes action to get back into the swing of things after yesterday's holiday. So thanks for tuning in this morning. Don't forget, be back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. No, less than that, about 45 minutes with OTB Live. Want to thank our friends at Gulfstream for their sponsorship of this program, some of the other programming events here on Capital OTB. Championship meet running through April again. We appreciate the support from Gulfstream Park. All right, I'm Seth Merrill. This has been Racing Across America for a Sunday morning. Thanks for tuning in. Again, we'll see you in less than an hour for OTB Live.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.